You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When Steelers minicamp opened up on Tuesday, Najee Harris joined the other running backs in the NFL who were talking about their value and how it's impacting their contract situation in the NFL. To talk about that, we've got Ray Fittipaldo, who was right there with me talking to Najee Harris at the scrum at the Steelers minicamp. We'll talk about that and the identity of the Steelers offense as well as the Buccos with Andrew Destin, all here in the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter. Let's get into it.
You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter.
Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, joined here by Ray Fittipaldo, one of our esteemed Steelers beat writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Get all of our content at post-gazette.com, but find all of our podcast content on all your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoyed it on YouTube. Subscribe to this YouTube channel to get all of your daily Monday through Friday episodes, as well as our bonus content that comes out here because we do Monday, Wednesday, Friday for this show, but we have tons of other content that comes out for all of our other shows. Now, Ray, wanted to talk to you about Najee Harris because as usual, when he gets up to the mic, he has a lot to say. And we'll talk about the specific Steelers element in a bit, but I want to talk about more of a national element and something that's been coming out with more running backs. Saquon Barkley's addressed it. Other running backs addressed it. Dalvin Cook has been released and is a free agent. And people are wondering, is he even like, who's going to even sign him? And it's a legitimate question, I think, that's out there right now because people are questioning the value of the running back position in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think it's unfortunate, but you mentioned the two big storylines in New York and Minnesota right now, and we've seen this play out the last 5 or 10 years. Running backs have a short shelf life, mm-hmm. and when it comes to teams wanting to sign them to second contracts, there's not a lot of bite a lot of the times. Teams just say, hey, you know, we're good having you for 4-5 years, and then we're going to move on and sign the next young guy. So, honestly, I think that's one of the reasons the Steelers took Najee Harris in the first round. They could control him for 5 seasons. If he has a good season this year, they'll pick up that fifth-year option, and they'll have him in his prime years. I want to say, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, when he was drafted, he was 22 going on 23. So play that out over 5 years. You have him through his prime, really, right? I mean,
yeah.
All running backs, I shouldn't say all running backs, most running backs begin to decline age 29, age 30, and on. And it's an unfortunate situation, but we saw the Dallas Cowboys get burned with this. They signed Ezekiel Elliott to a big deal, a big second contract, and he didn't play to that contract. He didn't earn that the money in that contract. So I understand it from the team's perspective. I also understand it from the running back's perspective, but I just think that's where they are right now, and there's not a lot they can do about it.
Let's hear from Najee Harris and what exactly he was saying on what his side was, and why he said he kind of aligned himself with the other running backs who've made their case. Here's Najee Harris when he was talking after Steelers minicamp practice on Tuesday.
What they say about the running back, you know, it's kind of the position's kind of going downwards. But, you know, if you look at some of the offenses, you know, the running back is featured a lot, you know. So just kind of what the guys were saying, you know, just show a little bit more appreciation, you know, because obviously it's a rough position. You know, what we go through is probably one of the roughest positions. So, you know, I'm just advocating and I'm, you know, joining that team of, you know, I agree with pretty much what those guys are saying. You know, I'm just – anyway, you know, because I'm a running back myself, and I'm pretty sure any running backs who want to come in the league are just even people going around and telling them, you know, if you want to get paid, you know, don't be a running back. You know what I mean? So it's just the position is an art to me. I'll always love the position. You know, you could do so much. It's almost as if like you're a queen in chess, you know, because you could do a lot of things, line up out wide, run the ball, protection. You know, it could be in implement in the offense so much. It's like, you know, for them to say it's a position, you know, it's not as valued, as it's kind of crazy. So,
is it surprising or is it weird to see when you see a guy like Dalvin Cook get released and Zeke?
Yeah.
I mean, they're longtime guys with the organizations playing the same position. Is it weird
it's
when
crazy.
You see those guys hit the market?
Yeah, yeah. Especially, you know, they say that when you turn a certain age, then you're out of your years of playing, which is crazy. You know what I mean? If you feel like you were able to play still, you know what I mean, then who is it for somebody else to say that you can't? Like, they don't know your body, neither have they been in your position. They're just people riding behind the internet. They don't really don't know how you train. They don't know how you take care of your body. It's just people making assumptions, which they don't know nothing about. You know, so to see people like that get released, like, you know, it's especially in my position, it's like, damn, what did they do? Is it because of their age or anything? Like, Dalvin Cook coming off of multiple thousand-yard seasons, like, what? I don't know. Is it money from the team? They got to pay somebody? I don't know. But, you know, it's eye-opening for sure.
Yeah. Now, Ray, that's some pretty strong words there from Najee Harris. I wanted to get into what you thought when you hear him say, I don't know about who these people are, like, but, you know, somewhere on the internet that don't have the experience. And talking about Dalvin Cook, Dalvin Cook has had four straight years with 1,100 rushing yards or more. One of those years he rushed over 1,500 yards, and he's been on fire in the NFL. He's been one of the biggest factors in the Vikings' success when you look at at some of the games that they've won over the past several years. What's your response when you hear Najee Harris talking about those specific internet people that he mentioned?
I have no idea what he's talking about. These are NFL teams. The Minnesota Vikings released him. What's he talking about, right? I mean, what did he say? People on the internet? Those are people running NFL teams who don't value running backs. So, you know, I don't know. Najee likes to talk, gets on a roll sometimes. Honestly, I don't know. Sometimes I don't think he knows what he's saying. But, I mean, it's the reality, right? I mean, this is the way the NFL is now. There's some talk about, what, a running backs union? I mean, I don't know how you do that within a structure.
Yeah, I don't know either.
The NFLPA, right? I mean, that's a pipe dream to me. Listen, people have tried to take stands. Le'Veon Bell tried to take a stand 6 years ago. How did that work mm-hmm. out for him?
Didn't work out too well.
How did that work out for other running backs?
Mm-hmm. It kind of proved the point of the teams that were like, you know, we can move on. Granted, the Steelers' offense struggled without Le'Veon Bell. They had a lot of fumbles, but Le'Veon Bell couldn't just go to the Jets and make the same magic happen.
Hey, listen, the only thing that's changed is that the Steelers have changed from 2017. They were this high-scoring offense that was built around Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger. Now, Najee Harris can make a legit argument that, hey, you built your offense around me, pay me. Is that going to make a difference in 2 years? I don't know, Chris, but honestly, I don't think a lot has changed. In the past 5, 10, 15 years, running backs just aren't valued. And it's no one on the internet who's making these declarations. It's NFL teams who are signing these checks who are making these declarations.
I will say this. There are NFL teams that, if you listen to people who do like the analytics and stuff that drive some of these conversations online, NFL teams have started to listen to those analytics, because I think that part of what's happened, I listen a lot to like Warren Sharp, a guy that does a lot of analytics stuff. And he's talked about on multiple shows about how, you know, he was an engineer who just wanted to come up with data and then, you know, kind of show what that data represents for teams. And more teams have started to go that way as far as using those analytics. And I think it's that the people that drive those conversations on the internet and you know, go by these analytics. And I think PFF, Pro Football Focus, and, you know, other groups like that, they're showing these numbers and teams are going by the same numbers as them. And so maybe that's what he means by people on the internet. But your point stands very much, is that it doesn't matter if people on the internet are saying it. What it matters is the people in the front offices are saying it and acting behind it. And, you know, I think you bring up a good point, and Ron Cook brought up a good point in his column about Najee Harris, and saying, you know what, in a year, he's going to be in the same situation, because next year the Steelers have to figure out, do they want a fifth-year extension with him? He'll be in his fourth season with them. And then they got to figure out, you know, is Najee Harris worth paying, you know, at his point? You know, Dalvin Cook one of the best running backs in football. It will be 28 years old this season, and he is a free agent from the team that drafted him, the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, absolutely. What you mentioned about the analytics is true, Chris, but every team has an analytics department now. Some might have smaller ones than others. Some might have big ones. You know, there are a lot of teams that, their front office is built around, you know, analytics in the way they look at things. But PFF, Warren Sharp, they're not driving conversations within NFL front offices. I think they're providing information that supports what NFL front offices do. So, I think Najee Harris and Dalvin Cook and Saquon Barkley, I think they're getting raw deals. I do. I think there's an argument to be made that they are worth that money. But I also know that the NFL hasn't been wanting to change the running back market for the last generation or so, and I just don't see that changing. I think that position by NFL front offices and coaches is viewed differently than other positions, and they believe they can go out, get a younger guy, run him into the ground, and do it all over again in a 4 or 5 year span. So I feel bad for those guys, but I don't think anything is going to change within the league, at least not in the next couple of years.
I hear you on that. Let's talk about a little bit more about what that value that Najee Harris will have to the Steelers this year, because he talked about the Steelers' identity. Want to get your thoughts on that here in a minute on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. But first, let's talk about our friends at GameTime.co, one of the great sponsors of the show. Buying tickets to your favorite events shouldn't be stressful. That's where GameTime, the new app that helps you get tickets to your favorite events, comes in to help you, because it's a fast and easy way to buy tickets for all the sports, music, comedy, and theater events near you, even up to the last minute, with killer deals that give, and they have their best price guarantee, so you can stop stressing over the tickets and start getting hyped for the fun that you'll have. The Game Time app allows you to book tickets up to the last minute, and even if you didn't plan out far in advance and you found something there, Game Time is going to give you opportunities to save big on big tickets. You get flash deals for any events. And this is football, basketball, baseball, concerts, comedy events, theater events, anything that near you, Game Time is going to help you find it. And the Game Time guarantee means that you'll always get the best price. So if you go and find tickets for your event in the same section and same row for less money somewhere else, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PITTPIT for $20 off your first purchase. Or go to their website, GameTime.co. Terms and conditions apply. Create an account and redeem code PITTPIT for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Back here on the North Shore Drive podcast, I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Ray Fittipaldo, continuing our Steelers talk here. Ray, Najee addressed the identity of the Steelers offense, and he talked about how they started to come into their own, at least running the ball last year in the second half of the season, and he talked about how they're further along this year. But when you look at that, I think people look at that point last year where, yeah, sure, they were running the ball better, but the offense still wasn't where they wanted it to be. Do you feel like this is something, and Najee felt like it was something that's going to carry over, but do you feel like the offense is truly in a place where they're going to be able to pick up on the progress that they were able to pull off last year and kind of show and kind of keep stepping forward this year instead of kind of having to wait the first 3 or 4 weeks for them to kind of get their feet back under them?
Yeah, no, I think those early season struggles that they endured last year, I would be shocked if they happened again this year. I think they discovered their winning formula. You know, it was to play conservative football and to lean on your defense and to shorten games. And, I think that's going to be a big part of their success in 2023 if they're able, to be a playoff team. But I also think at a certain point, you have to be able to score more than 17 or 20 points in a game. And there are going to be games where you're going to be in shootouts, you know, with the Bengals or the Chiefs or the Chargers or the Jaguars or any number of the contenders in the AFC. So, yeah, the identity is going to be the same, Chris, but I think, you know, Matt Canada is talking today. Mike Sullivan is talking today after minicamp practice. So the questions for them are going to be, okay, can Kenny Pickett audible this year? You had the reins on him last year for the entire season. Mitch Trubisky, is he going to be able to audible, number one? Number two, are you going to open up more of the playbook, and are you going to trust Kenny Pickett more in certain situations? You don't have to have him throw 35, 40 times a game, but there might be situations where you feel like you could unleash him against certain opponents or certain matchups. So, you know, I'm looking forward to see what those guys have to say today. I think that's going to be a big part of the equation. I think, honestly, that's going to be a big part of them, really. What did they finish last year, 25th, 26th in the league in scoring? I think they got to get up to like 18 or 20, maybe even higher if they want to be a true playoff contender.
No, I agree with that part of it, because I think that there's like, you look at the, if they're, especially if their defense ranks in like the top five, top 10 category, they're able to have a full year with TJ Watt and Minkah Fitzpatrick and Cam Hayward, and they perform at the level that I expect. I think that the defense can be one of those top units, and the offense just needs to be a middling unit, and a middling unit would be six around that 16, 15 range. I think that I think that puts them in the playoffs for sure. Maybe even makes them a team they could knock out another playoff opponent or two, based on just how the defense plays. But going into it, you know, part of the identity part though is like, you know, Kenny Pickett, what's he allowed to do? What is he allowed to add to this offense? I think it's also going to be based on what is he allowed to, you know, what is going to be the focus of this offense when is running the ball down people's throats, using physicality. Is that going to be something that they can rely on? We know they've invested in Broderick Jones. They've invested in Isaac Seumalo. The offensive line got better last year as the year went on. Najee Harris and Jalen Warren, I think, are a 1-2 punch that could work for that. They got, you know, they made sure to bring back Zach Gentry, and they drafted Darnell Washington. So they have big tight ends they can put up front and can block. And all of this lines up for me. And I say, Ray, like, okay, this is what you've been shaping up for. They've got to be able to follow through on it. And if they don't follow through on it, it's going to be that much harder for Kenny Pickett to be able to kind of do what we're talking about here. Like, he can call audibles all he wants, but if teams aren't afraid of at least one significant aspect of the Steelers offense, be it Kenny Pickett's throwing or Najee Harris's running or the offensive line and how they operate, you're going to be in a similar position this year, because you every offense that's really good or even decent needs a bread and butter that teams are afraid of.
Well, that's going back to the first half of last season. I remember asking Mason Cole in the locker room, what's your identity? And he said, we don't have one right now. So the positive development in the second half of the season is they found their identity. And you have to remember, Chris, when you're a team that can run the ball, and they didn't even, you know, their second half performance, I'd have to look at the numbers. But they, even in the second half, they weren't like a prolific running team. They were just good enough to win football games. You know, right. Najee Harris was much better than he was in the first half. Mm-hmm. If you can improve that, let's say you become a top 14, top 16 rushing team in the NFL, there's so much more you can do off of that. You know, you mentioned Darnell Washington. Okay, he's in there for the running game. You pop him on a third and two, you pop him down the seam. Boom, big play action. So there's so much you can do within your offense when you have a successful running game, but they just have to get to the point. I understand what you're saying. They have to get to the point where they're respected by every defense that they play, and then I think the offense will flow off that. So, again, you know, what I saw in the second half of last season was encouraging, but I definitely think Matt Canada and Mike Tomlin have to open up the playbook a little bit more, put a little bit more trust in Kenny Pickett for this offense to grow and to become a little bit more dangerous.
No, I agree. Part of that's on Matt Canada, and he does talk Wednesday at Steelers minicamp. We'll get more from him for the Friday episode when he talks there. You know, and I think that part of this also is, if you look at Matt Canada and where he's been, when Ben Roethlisberger took over, or when he took over as offensive coordinator in Ben Roethlisberger's last season, I'm sure he didn't have a lot of flexibility to kind of tell Ben Roethlisberger what to do. I think Ben was going to, like, this is my offense. Get out of the way. This is what I'm supposed to do here. And then he comes into a season where Kenny Pickett and Mitch Trubisky are his quarterbacks, and you're dealing with a veteran guy who was kind of brought in to be a bridge quarterback at best, and then a rookie quarterback who you're trying to kind of just ease him into the process. Right. Have you felt that, like, maybe Matt Canada has kind of just – he hasn't had the best situations to work with? Or do you think it's like, you know what? No, like, other teams work with young quarterbacks, and they and that you still need to be able to produce at a higher level than they have.
Yeah. I mean, you're an NFL offensive coordinator. You have to work with what you have. I mean, there's no excuses in the NFL. And it's like, I think Matt Canada has been justly criticized for some things over the years when he's been in this position. But I also think that Mike Tomlin had the handcuffs on him. And Mike Tomlin pretty much admitted to that after last season. So it's a balancing act. I think Matt Canada can be better. I think Mike Tomlin can have more trust in his coordinator and his quarterback. And I think that just – that goes into team building. That goes into how you want to play. So, I mean, I get it. You know, Matt Canada, you could say he's been dealt a tough hand, but there's plenty of offensive coordinators out there who have restraints on them, who might have young quarterbacks, who might have limited talent around them that have been able to scheme things up and produce results. So this is a big year for Matt Canada. I think it's make or break for him. I think if he wants to be the coordinator for this team beyond 2023, this offense has to get a lot, lot better.
I agree with that sentiment entirely. It doesn't matter, you know, if Kenny Pickett gets hurt this year, not saying that he will, but even if there's, if something like that does happen, it's up to Matt Canada to make sure that this offense does go. I think even if they're 16, I'm not sure that he sticks around. I think that they'd have to be in that 14 to 10 range. And that's saying a lot of a big jump from them this year. Exactly, because they were, what, 26th in scoring last year? So if they get up to 16, I think it creates an interesting conversation of where they could go from there. But I still think at that point they might be like, you know what, we can go with, like, they can make a Todd Haley move. They can go get a more experienced NFL coordinator. They're like, all right, like, you know offenses. We need you to get our young quarterback to be, you know, with the other top quarterbacks in the NFL. I think if they don't see that kind of progress, they will be moving on from Matt Canada. But again, we'll see what Matt Canada has to say in minicamp. He speaks on Wednesday. Ray, thanks so much for joining us here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We're going to switch topics to the Buccos, who lost a tough one to the Cubs in Chicago. Andrew Destin joins me to talk about that here on the North Shore Drive podcast. We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Andrew Destin, who covers a lot of things for us at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. But during the summer, he's one of our Pirates guys, backing up Jason Mack. He was on the road covering the Pirates and the Cubs. The Pirates, though, got shelled a little bit there, 3-11 in a loss to the Cubs in Chicago, but they still hold on to first place in the NL Central by a whole game. The Brewers, who they have coming up in the series after their next two games with the Cubs, that's going to be a huge talk about here. Andrew, the Pirates are 2-4 in their last six games, including two losses to the A's, and now this beat down at the hands of the Cubs. But they've had their good moments. They had really good pitching from Mitch Keller. He bounced back for some rough times to finish out the Mets series. They scored 14 runs in a win over the Mets to start that series. What do you see coming from them? Because these next eight games, they're not going to define the season because it's just too long of a season. But it's important to stack up wins in your division, especially when you're holding on to first place right now and it's mid-June.
Yeah, and I know Jason Mackey has talked about this before on this show, as well as the podcast him and I do together on Tuesdays. It's, you know, you don't want to overstate the importance of playing these divisional games. But with the way that the schedule is structured now, where you're playing every team across MLB instead of just, you know, the divisional play being of heightened importance and playing interleague games, you know, being pretty sporadic. This nine-game stretch, I'll even extend it to when the Pirates come back home quickly for three games against the Chicago Cubs. These are nine really important games, and especially the five remaining ahead of them on this road trip. This is really important, and I think there's some slightly concerning things you take away from that game last night, because what have we talked about all season about the Pirates' success? I mean, yes, it's been the timely hitting. Yes, it's been having good starting pitching. But at the forefront, it's been the bullpen, right? That's been something that's been huge for the Pirates. The success of guys like David Bednar and Colin Holderman as the ninth and eighth inning guys, respectively. But it's been more than that. It's been, wow, you're getting really great results from Adauri Moretta. You're getting great results, you know, in a career year for Johan Ramirez. You know, that was not the case last night. And I'm not saying that one game should be cause for panic. It shouldn't. But you look at it yesterday, and there are some things that you can extrapolate and say, okay, Johan Ramirez, a third of an inning, three hits, four earned runs. Rob Zastrzyzny, he has not had a good year. When healthy, an inning and two-thirds, three hits, three runs, a walk. I mean, it's gotten to a point where with a guy like Zastrzyzny, you maybe think about it a little bit of, hey, is this a lefty arm that we want to keep in the bullpen? I know they've got Perdomo back up there. But, you know, when you have a guy like Yarlene Garcia who's hurt and seemingly not coming back anytime soon, these are kind of the things the Pirates have had to navigate. And I don't want to call it smoke and mirrors, but you can get your way through a month or 2 months of baseball where it's, you know, you're not quite as healthy. But I know Jason and I have expressed that concern on the Pirates' behalf about the pitching staff in total. And I think yesterday was just an example of if your bullpen's not perfect and doesn't rise to the occasion, that's something that's concerning. And how does that play over these next 6 days? Because, you know, you got another game today, you got another one Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday in Milwaukee against the team that's been chasing you. And on that point about the Brewers, this is a team that, for the large part, has kind of underperformed this year, given who they have. Right. And they're still sitting here a few games over 500, very much breathing down the Pirates' necks. So you can make the argument that, say, the Cardinals, for instance, they've maybe shown us who they really are, that this is a team that's got a lot of work cut out for it to climb out of the hole it's dug. But the Brewers, they've shown who they haven't shown who they really are, just in the sense that, yeah, they're not playing great baseball or what they're capable of, but they're right there with the Pirates, who have maybe exceeded expectations. And you have to wonder, at what juncture does this bullpen that has been wildly improved compared to last year, does that start to come back down to earth as the pitching depth starts to really hurt the Pirates, considering who's out right now with a JT Brubaker out for the year, no Vince Velasquez, Mike Burrows, one of your top prospects, you know, only threw two games this year before he went down. When your starting pitching depth is impacting you like the way it has for the Pirates this year, you know, eventually that bullpen, it can only cover so many innings. So that's just something that I slightly raised some concerns about. It might be overreaction just on one game, but there's things that you can point to as, well, we haven't seen that in a long, long time, at least not from a guy like Johan Ramirez, who's been sensational the, you know, the rest of the season, really.
Is there enough of the Pirates? Can the Pirates bats come into their own a little bit more to kind of ease that up? Because it looked for a little bit there that maybe they would be able to. There was a little bit of back and forth between them and the Cubs in the middle innings there after Ortiz was pulled in the fifth. And, you know, I think that the Pirates scored a run, then the Cubs scored a run, but then the Cubs just went ballistic, and then the Pirates bats didn't have any answers for it. Is it reasonable to expect with this lineup for them to be able to kind of carry that weight sometimes when the bullpen doesn't have their best guys available?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible. I don't know that it's a sustainable model by any means, but I think that when you're getting contributions like you are right now from Jack Sawinski, who we all saw what he did last night, hitting two home runs back in his hometown, essentially. Yeah, this is a guy who's swinging the bat really well right now and really has all season for the Pirates, right? Their leader in home runs. I believe he's up to 15 now after yesterday. I think that's correct. So you look at him, I mean, what he's doing against a former Pirate and Jameson Taillon. Sawinski's a guy who certainly is capable. We saw it last year when he got hot and he got called up. It's like when he's on his game and he's hitting homers at a frequent clip, he can be a really impactful guy for a team's winning effort. So I think he's a bat for sure. Something that maybe has gone a little bit understated has been Brian Reynolds cooling off a little bit after that hot month of April. The whole team, really, you could point to in May is saying that they weren't really at the top of their game. Obviously, that was a dreadful month, but Reynolds is somebody who may be a point to as if he can take the next step getting back to what he's capable of, then that certainly bodes well for the Pirates in June. This team is never going to be a top five offensive juggernaut, but they can be top 15. I mean, you look at the three outfielders in Joe and Reynolds and Sawinski. These are all guys who rank in the top 11, I believe it is, in WAR. So these are top third outfielders in baseball. You're not asking everybody to be Aaron Judge. You're just asking them to be a little bit above average, which they have been. The question is that enough for a team to stay in first place, or do you need that to be in conjunction with tremendous bullpen efforts and pretty good starting pitching from guys like a Mitch Keller and Rich Hill seemingly giving you 6 innings, 3 runs, or 7 innings, 3 runs every time he goes out there. It's not, you know, 7 innings of shutout ball, but he's making things competitive. Ortiz did to some degree yesterday, though Ian Happ getting the three-run homer off him definitely didn't help the cause. So I look at it as the bats are there. They're capable of enough. I don't know that it's sustainable, but it might be able to push them through a streak if the bullpen is stumbling a little bit. The bigger question is, will this bullpen revert back to the first 2 months that were tremendous, or are we going to see some market correction here over the next few months that maybe leads to a little bit of a slide from the Pirates? That's what I'm really curious about watching.
I'm curious about that too. You know, because if their bullpen can get back to when they were strong, I think it puts them in a strong position. But you know, something we talked about early in the season in April, they seem to have a lot of different ways they could beat you. That, you know, with their ability to perform well on the bases, you know, their ability to still play, that's kind of cooled off as well. And I think that's one thing the Pirates have kind of experienced, is that they haven't been able to pull back more of the ways that they were beating opponents, because it wasn't just one way. It wasn't just the bats. It wasn't just starting pitching. It wasn't just their bullpen. They were able to pull all those together, and that's what kind of made April so special. And we knew you couldn't have all of that throughout the whole season. I mean, that's what elite teams do, and this isn't an elite team. A lot of people projected them to finish just below 500 at best this year. And you know, I look at that and I say, okay, but I do think that there are ways for this team to pull out games throughout the year and keep them afloat in an NL Central that's not that good. Like you said, the team is chasing them right now. The Brewers, they're underperforming their own expectations. But Andrew, give us a couple predictions here to finish out the week here. They play 2 more games against the Cubs. I believe it's Smiley and Stroman they got coming up. That's on the mound. And the otherwise on the other side of things, where do you see the Pirates finishing this series? Or they get swept, or do they bounce back and win a game or two here?
I think they're going to win a game or two. It's going to be interesting having Osvaldo Beto come up here with the Pirates. He's now part of the roster. I believe that's correct. He was a taxi squad member for yesterday's game. He's with the team up in Chicago. Very curious to see how he does on the mound. We obviously all know what Marcus Stroman is capable of back in his days in Toronto and with the Mets, obviously, as a good pitcher. Smiley is a funky lefty. I look at this series. I said it to Jason Mackey that this was something that was going to probably be a 500 road trip where you'd like to go 3-3. And I said probably take 2 out of 3 from the Cubs, take 1 out of 3 from the Brewers. That looks a lot less likely after you lose the Ortiz tie-on start, but I'll stick to my guns. I'll say they'll find a way to win the next two. I'm not exactly sure how they'll pull it off against Stroman, but I think they bounce back tonight for that game, and then you look ahead to the Thursday. We'll see. I'm thinking that this will be a 500 road trip in total, but yesterday certainly was a blow to that because that wasn't on my bingo card.
Well, hey, we'll see how they perform the rest of the way. 2 more games against the Cubs, and then they're on the road in Milwaukee, a place that's been tough for them to win over the years. But if they're able to at least kind of mitigate that, that might be a big stance for them to hold on to their division lead as they head towards the end of June. He's Andrew Destin for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Thank you so much, Andrew, for joining us here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. Thanks again to Ray Fittipaldo for talking Steelers minicamp. That continues Wednesday and Thursday here, where we'll have all our coverage at post-gazette.com. Thanks again to everyone who enjoys the show on your favorite podcasting app or on YouTube. Remember, this show is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but we have daily content that comes out all the time from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, including a salute to Stan Saverin, a true legend and icon in Pittsburgh media. Do check that out. We had some great conversations. I believe it was Adam Bittner and Joe Starkey talking about the legend that Stan left behind and how he touched so many people in Pittsburgh media with just being a great person who worked very hard at his job and loved what he did here in Pittsburgh sports media. We'll be back Friday talking Steelers and Pirates and see how the week is ending for both of them as the Steelers wrap up minicamp and the Pirates get ready to head to Milwaukee. See you then, right here on the North Shore Drive podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you're watching this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our YouTube channel. For 6 months of digital access to post-gazette.com for just $6, click the link down below in the description.